Kia ora, I'm Madison Reedy, and you're listening to the Deloitte Private Podcast, On Point. Being a business owner is anything but easy, especially when challenges like COVID-19 come your way. In this podcast, we'll chat to some of the best Kiwi entrepreneurs who've come out the other side of crises before. We'll find out how they turned failures into fuel and self-doubt into success. Expect stories from the startup trenches and guidance about growth directly from those who've done it. This is On Point. Imagine you're on the top of the ski slopes in the South Island. It's a bluebird day, the powder's fresh, and you're wearing Mons Royale. That's been a possibility since the Wanaka-based activewear company started making merino mountain gear in 2009. Within months, Hamish Ackland was exporting Mons Royale clothing to Europe. Now the former pro free skier has offices around the world, including in Austria and North America, selling his apparel to 750 stockists worldwide. His clothing line is worn by some of the top action sports athletes, and half of their sales are to women. Hamish, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Tell me about that moment that your brand idea clicked, that you thought there's a niche that you could fill in the outdoor clothing market.
Yeah, I can't say that, when the click is. I think the entrepreneurial mind is probably more into a lot of ideas floating around and coming together. But essentially where it came from, I was skiing around the world, living out of a ski bag. And that's kind of a minimalist lifestyle. And when you're a pro skier, you put your skis in first, and your equipment, and what you wear off the slopes really comes second. So I got given all my gear and clothing, and I had a merino base layer, but I would never wear it on the plane. I definitely wouldn't wear it to the bar. And then I had a bunch of branded cotton t-shirts from sponsors. And you would never wear them skiing because they weren't technical. So it was just obvious to me that there was a room for a technical garment that sort of had the energy and style that really represented the scene and the culture and the group that I was from. And so I think over about 2 or 3 years as I skied around the world, I just played with that idea. Because in the background, you've got to understand, as any athlete, is your career is very finite, and you're thinking about, you know, what are you going to do next? And for me, I was really like, you know, am I going to leverage 10 years of traveling around the world, working with major sponsors, creating connections? And, you know, how am I best to do that? You know, I could have been a guide, probably wouldn't have been a great one. A ski coach would have been... cool, maybe a marketing job, but, you know, why not go for a global brand?
You're obviously an ideas man and sitting on that idea for 3 years. How did you go from this could be something to actually executing on it?
Yeah, so what actually happened, you know, I'm a little bit geeky. So I don't think the majority of pro skiers were traveling around the world doing market analysis and walking into stores thinking about what a brand could be. So I had that insight, but I also said, what would... To launch a brand into a global action sports market, what would it be and why? What would give it the most level of success? And really went around sort of crafting each of those things. Like, you know, why wouldn't a big brand be able to copy it? How would we get on the world's best athletes to gain sort of visibility and credibility? How would we do all of those things? And then I just kind of set about writing that down and building, I guess, a brand blueprint and story. And then essentially I sent it to my brother and Ben, who joined me later on in the venture. But I said to him, hey, look, you know, should I keep skiing or should I, you know, do this? And he was like, holy, you gotta do it now. And interestingly, I got stuck into it. I was also running a ski magazine and skiing, and I essentially just burnt out and blew my knee competing, which in hindsight was awesome when you're really, kind of full on into one thing. You actually need to turn off the other things. So that just put me absolutely into the mode of building this brand and then, just put the blinkers on.
How much do you think that depth of market research played into what is now the success of your brand?
I think you've got to look at it in two parts. You're trying to get validation in the beginning, and I think the market research absolutely helped. I wouldn't say I did it you know, I'm not a trained market research person, but I looked at other categories. You know, I was really trying to look at, if failure is so high, how do I stack myself with every advantage possible? And so that was just kind of the constant question is, you know, like, if failure is so high, like, how do I do this? And so we had a very clear plan for the first 3 years and 4 years, and it went kind of to plan, which looking back seems kind of ridiculous.
I was about to say, having such a clear set plan, did that make it difficult to be fluid and roll with the punches when some things didn't go to that plan?
Yeah, so it's only in hindsight that it all goes to plan. So I think we didn't know the how. So, you know, we designed the brand, and this is my wife, Hannah, who's the, you know, co-founder and creative director. But I actually met her. I'd started work on the brand and essentially went and launched it at ISPO, at this major trade show in Munich. And it completely failed. We didn't get any orders. And I kind of knew that the brand wasn't quite right, like the graphics, the identity, the idea was right, but the translation was wrong. And then Hannah stepped in and essentially redesigned the brand identity. And I think 2 weeks while I was judging a comp skiing powder, and having this, I guess, courage to kind of go, we've got this wrong, but we really believe in that we can get it right, enabled us to do that. And I think we shipped and we're in stores in, like, say, June or July, and you should be really shipping in March or you know, March or April for a normal winter down here. So I think there was a big part. And then the other how, we didn't really know how to go global. There wasn't really a blueprint, but I just leveraged in on my contacts and my ski sponsor, Vocal Skis. I was really close with those guys and had skied with them for years. And my team manager introduced me to a retailer in Switzerland who was also a distributor of skis and outerwear. And essentially in year one, we landed a Swiss retailer in the ski resort of Laax. And then that connection then spread. And pretty quickly we were in France, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and then into the Nordics within, you know, the first 4 years.
Yeah, let's talk about exporting, because that is such a massive part of your business. And as you mentioned already, you were so quick to export. Mons Royale launched in New Zealand stores in June 2009. Your first shipment went to Switzerland that same year in October. So within 4 months, you were international. What was the benefit of exporting so quickly, of thinking big and outside of New Zealand right from the beginning?
Yeah, I think that was a little bit of the analysis. Like, there is no way, and I think this is like different product categories have different scales. So there is a little bit of defendability in creating merino apparel that you kind of have to have some scale, what you did to start with. And so we never would have had we could have never created a New Zealand brand with the concept that we had. The concept needed the scale of the Northern Hemisphere, and it was very much orientated around succeeding in the Northern Hemisphere. So every part of the brand needed, we didn't want it to sound Kiwi, you know, and there was another big brand around that we didn't want to get the comparison with. And so we really wanted to fill a gap that we felt that there was globally. And that is that there wasn't a technical product that had that style and energy of the mountains that was based around this amazing fiber merino wool. So when you look at New Zealand, you were like, well, everyone understands it. But when you looked globally, well, the market is that the gap is so much bigger. So I think having that global view has been, been instrumental to the success, you know, of the brand and even the brand here. Like, a lot of Kiwis didn't even know there was a Kiwi brand in the beginning.
So you knew that you were onto a winner in terms of product and brand, but how did you then get consumers, which are different in all markets, to buy into that?
The product. You know, I can't remember who it was, but it kind of, you know, hurt me a little bit. He said, this guy said to me, you know, well, you're doing really well because brand is not selling this product. It is hanger appeal. And I was like, what do you mean? It's totally the brand. You know, we're 4 or 5 years in, but quite rightly, no one knew the brand or the brand story. They were walking into a retailer, let's say in Norway, in Oslo, and they were connecting with what we had created, which is a really bright, bold, and just had this irreverence. And, you know, you've got to remember, in Norway, wool, everyone is wearing wool. That is not even unique. So to be able to go there and connect was really the feeling that the brand had with the product. And when they pulled it on, and we talk about this, you know, we sow energy into everything we do, and that includes the product. And, you know, sometimes when you go skiing, you want something that gives you that mountain feel, or when you go for a run, some people want to have something really bright. Well, that's what we wanted to do, is pull it on and feel really confident and really good.
So your advice to anyone starting an apparel company, focus on the product and not so much the brand in the earlier days?
Yeah, I think so. I think what is the key differentiator, and for us it was the product DNA, but brand takes time. And I think we're really now hitting, you know, 10 years, well, a little bit more than 10 years now, but at 10 years you really start to hit brand and brand sales. But you've got to find that love of what they're buying, and there has to be a real need. You know, if there's not a real need, then don't create it. And that's the product.
Obviously, exporting isn't easy in normal times, but we're not in normal times right now. Can you pinpoint a challenge that you've faced in your business recently and tell us how you got or are still getting through it?
Yeah, I've just been in nearly 3-hour meeting. Logistics is extremely difficult right now globally for everyone, and everyone knows this, and so is production capacity. There's been a lot of shifts in demand, and, you know, we don't have a problem with demand. Our forward orders and our business is well up. And probably the thing to understand there, that is because there's been a major consumer shift to people wanting to be in the outdoors more and wanting to make a more conscious choice around sustainability. So Mons sits in a really good place there. But getting the product to market is really difficult. We're really lucky and well prepared early on, and what we're definitely facing now is that we are competing against really big brands for factory space and for logistics space. And we have to, you know, use a lot of teamwork and solve problems to try and get it there to market. And it's been a pretty constant challenge, and I think a lot of businesses are facing this. It's going to be a constant challenge for the months, if not years ahead.
Yeah, I can only imagine how relentless that would be. How do you mentally cope with stress and challenges that are often outside of your control as a business owner?
Well, even if they are in your control, you're still going to manage it, right? I've certainly changed how I work. And with running a global business, so we have an office in Innsbruck and Squamish or Whistler, and, you know, there's a 12-hour time difference. You know, previously I did the late night call in the early morning, you know, multiple days a week for, you know, multiple years, and that just, you know, like in the end, it's pretty unhealthy, and it's very hard to turn off, like, to get, you know, good sleep. I've got a really good COO, a guy, Craig Throne, who's come on board, and he's picked up that whole commercial side, and it's probably just allowed me to just manage my energy to get better sleep. I work a lot earlier in the morning, and I think just getting that more regular sleep and exercise and time with family has been a really key to managing stress of, you know, and just the workload as well. You know, especially during these times, it's pretty crazy.
Is it what? We often hear as well about business owners having to split their time between working in their business and daily operations and working on their business, the future of it. How much time do you think is the correct balance between the two?
Oh, good question. No idea. I think my brain is very much a in the future. And that's, you know, a little bit how we have the split here at Mons. And product in it, you know, in apparel, we're nearly finished designing fall winter 23. So that is not next winter's range, that is the winter after. So we've really planned out, you know, and that makes it tough, but it means that you have to be well organized and really thinking ahead about, you know, what product we want to be for the future. So that's good from that point of view. And then I think as a business scales, what's really difficult is getting the right processes and people in place that enables you to kind of lift off and get more into the future. But you're really needing to stay in touch. So it's like, how does the information flow? What do you get to read? How do you gain? You know, I used to be on the selling, showing the garments not too many years ago to key retailers and our distributors. But when you stop doing that, how do you get that feedback? So I think that's a bit of a challenge, and we're still kind of going through it. And it just really depends on your scale, what your split is and what the urgency is of today versus the future.
How much weight does your vision for Mons in, say, 10 years play into your daily decision-making now?
Yeah, big, I think. Mainly, you know, I think we've been really lucky that we started down a path of really narrowing in around our brand purpose and our mission and what we really wanted to be pre-COVID. And then with COVID, that really helped consolidate us and probably has enabled us to really lift coming out of it and really accelerate. So I think that brand purpose, having that as, you know, definitively the most important thing to have as you're scaling, because it keeps everyone there. And then really having that, you know, sort of strategy that is going to enable the purpose and enable the business growth and, you know, compete against, you know, global brands and really connect with, you know, with the consumer globally.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you navigate that still scaling journey, how has working with Deloitte Private helped?
Yeah, we've got Kyle Cameron, who's been awesome for, you know, and he's been with us, I forget how long. I think, you know, one of the things that I reflect on is how fortunate we've been and who we've attracted to be around us and sort of mentored and support. And they don't stay with you the whole time, but it's you know, it's been pretty awesome. And, you know, we've been working with Deloitte for a long time, and I think they've gone through with us through some growing pains. They definitely saw, I guess, our potential and wanted to sort of help, and, you know, they certainly have.
Amazing. And obviously it's a very tricky time for so many businesses, including yours, and all of the challenges that you're facing right now. Not that you haven't overcome them in the past, but what's your advice finally to business owners out there who are doing it pretty tough right now?
I think we all forget as business owners is that there's other people, and probably is connecting with, you know, other people in that same role and having some chats. And I think I'm pretty lucky through that, and I've definitely reached out with some other people. Because when you are leading or you're the founder, it is a very different experience, and it's really hard to have conversations essentially with your team. You've got to look for, you know, some other people to discuss things with. and I think that's been really helpful for me. It's been really helpful when people come and ask me for advice, because you end up giving some advice and then go, I kind of need to go do that myself. So that's probably the thing there, is to reach out and find some like-minded people to have a chat with.
Amazing. Well, Hamish, thank you so much for joining us. It's incredible just how intentional you were with the Mons Royale brand 10 years ago, and to look at where you are now. That is Hamish Ackland, the co-founder of Mons Royale.
Thanks a lot for having me.
I'm Madison Reedy. Thank you for listening to On Point, brought to you by Deloitte Private.